The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, I'm Zach, and one day I'm going to make movies, but right now I'm young, dumb, and not nearly as good-looking as my co-hosts. So with the help of...
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven.
I'm going to learn what makes a movie great by watching all the classics I have skipped over. So pop the corn and turn your cell phone to silent, because it's time for a new episode of Zach on Film. Friend me, like, share, poke, wall, timeline, status updates, Farmville! How did it all begin? David Fincher and crew show us the early days of Facebook and The Social Network, and we talk it over this week on Zach on Film.
Ooh, Zach.
Hey, Steven.
A movie that you are very familiar with.
I am, actually. I've watched this many times.
The unofficial biography of Facebook.
Yeah, kind of.
Doesn't something have to be alive to have a biography?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a lot of the what went into the creation of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, and everybody involved, the Winklevoss twins, Spider-Man,
and
Brenda Song.
Right. Yeah. Sean Parker.
Oh, yeah. Sean Parker. Yeah.
London Tipton and Dennis Timberlake.
So walk us through this, Zach.
The story of Social Network is the story of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and his days at Harvard and the tumultuous relationships he has by a pair of twins who row crew at Harvard, who come with him with an idea for a new social networking site. He then may or may not have stolen their idea and created Facebook a few months later. And the social network is essentially the story of that cut in between litigation between two lawsuits between Mark Zuckerberg and his best friend Eduardo Sarvin and his lawsuit against him, and then the Winklevoss twins and their other Divya Nirenda partner suing Zuckerberg also. And it's essentially the beginning of Facebook.
Jesse Eisenberg took on everybody in Zombieland, right?
Yep.
Then he also, in this movie, takes on the Amazing Spider-Man and the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Michael Cera beat up, like, every superhero in Scott Pilgrim. Exactly. Like Superman, simultaneously the Human Torch, Captain America. Yeah. Yeah.
What I think makes this movie so fascinating is here you have two very big names as far as writing and directing goes. You got David Fincher, who's always everything has to be real and everything has to be fast. And then you've got Aaron Sorkin, who is, these words have to be exact. And if you try to change this, the whole my structure falls apart and you're smashing these two together. And quite honestly, when you look at this film, I don't think it would have been the same if one of them had been replaced. If this was not David Fincher directing, if this was not Aaron Sorkin writing, this would not be the same movie. Agree or disagree, Zach? Are you familiar with
Zach? No, I'm familiar with Fincher.
From what else?
Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
And something else, maybe. I'm trying to think of what else he's done.
Notice that we're not helping you here.
Yeah, I can tell. Sorkin, name's familiar. I don't remember when he's written.
He's written a lot of shows that you probably haven't seen. Sports Night,
right. Nope.
The West Wing.
The West Wing is probably the biggest one.
It. Studio 60 on Sunset Strip.
Yeah, nope, that was the show that happened.
Nope. And it was also, Sorkin actually played the ad exec in that scene where Eduardo and Zuckerberg go to New York, and Zuckerberg just sits there the whole through the whole meeting just going...
Yeah.
It's more of a glottal style.
Yeah. that's funny.
So,
trying to help you over here, Zach. Try.
So, is this a probably the biggest controversy? Is this is based on The Accidental Billionaire?
Right.
Or billionaires. And there's some controversy in Zuckerberg says, and again, it kind of makes Zuckerberg come off as a bit of a dick in the movie.
Kind of.
Well, I feel like I've always felt like in the movie, everyone always says he comes off like a dick. I said he comes off as a dick, but I feel like everyone in this movie comes off as a dick at some point.
And that's what it kind of is.
I think everyone gets a fair shake in this movie.
I also think that everybody comes I think that Zuckerberg specifically comes across like really cool in a way. He comes across as a jerk, but he comes across as somebody who is incredibly intelligent.
Right.
He comes across as somebody who is like a total shark at business when he's got his head to it. And someone who does, in fact, doing incredible things just because of how smart he is.
Right. And I think also some forces, just that, you know, the perfect tide kind of thing, or perfect storm kind of thing, where things just happened at the right time for him to stumble into this.
Yeah. And so this is based off Accidental Billionaires, which is not a biography, but is not a work of fiction.
Right.
He interviewed Eduardo and the Winklevosses, and I don't really know who else. Not Zuckerberg. He wouldn't be interviewed for the book. And so then they took interviews, made up some dialogue, inferred some things, and wrote this book, and then that was condensed down into The Social Network.
Which is a dense story. I mean, it's a two-hour movie, but it is dense as far as everything that's being covered. And I think that's why you have to have someone like Fincher direct this, because you have to have that dialogue flying back fast and furious, and you have to have the editing done just right, or else the movie becomes this long court drama.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Rodrigo?
I was going to say that's actually the format of the movie as well.
Yeah.
The narrative is basically delivered, the delivery system for it is these two settlement, like two meetings, so that he will settle with the Winklevosses and he will settle with Eduardo. That's basically how they cut back and forth in time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Matthew, you said again that Zuckerberg comes off as kind of a dick, or you question that statement.
I said this that goes Zuckerberg back to that. Comes off as incredible.
Go ahead and elaborate on that, but then also go back to the statement that and the question that Zach had a few episodes ago about, is this reality or is this twisting reality, and which one works in this case?
Well, and this is the biggest problem that I have, is when I sat down to watch this movie, I've never seen this. I didn't know what to expect. So we open with what felt like a 15-minute conversation between the fictionalized Mark Zuckerberg and his fictionalized girlfriend, which is designed to set up the final line. And her line is, people didn't drop you because you were a nerd. People dropped you because you were an a-hole. And that whole sequence was designed to put me – it felt like to put me in a point where I'm supposed to believe that this guy is socially awkward and basically – a jerk, a turbo douche, a Sheldon Cooper type person, only without the likability. And so that set me on the expectation going throughout this film that he's a jerk. So whenever it came down to, like, say, you know, the two heads of Army Hammer saying, you stole my stuff, my brain went, well, of course, look at him. He's a jerk. So I don't know how much of this is realistic. I will say that it does make for a very strong narrative, but it almost makes its case too much for me. And this is, you know, this is something that I love Aaron Sorkin. Sports Night is one of my favorite things. And when you really look at Aaron Sorkin, the biggest weakness I have is that Aaron Sorkin is a very, very intelligent man. And his expectation is that either the audience is super brilliant or they're just stupid. So either way, it kind of feels like things are alternately force-fed to me or not really laid out at all. So there are things where it feels like they're emphasizing stuff that is implicit in the story, and then we'll go and we'll gloss over something that I feel like I want more of. So,
well, so then that kind of brings into this next question, though, is are we being force-fed a lot of this stuff to make you think at the end did Zuckerberg really think this? Has he been planning this in game, especially with Eduardo, since you know, the year prior, the 3 years prior when the story takes place, and Eduardo got into the club and Zuckerberg did not. And so that brings into the question, is Zuckerberg, does he come off as a very Machiavellian prince type character? And did you guys read The Prince in Capstone?
I chose not to read The Prince.
Oh, okay. That was one of your options, though, right?
It was an option, but I chose Robert Rodriguez over Machiavelli.
Okay. So does Zuckerberg come off that way? Very much of a, you got a plot and break some eggs, and as the tag for the movie is, you know, you don't reach 5 million friends without making a few enemies.
Right. I think, to me, he didn't come across that way. To me, it seemed like he's the person that always picks the quote-unquote best decision at every juncture, right? And so he decides what he wants. He decides that he wants Facebook to move forward and he wants Facebook to succeed. So whenever there's a juncture and it's like, do I do the right thing or the correct thing, he picks the correct thing, correct, as opposed to the, like, right thing, the morally right thing to do.
Right.
And that's kind of mirrored by the Winklevosses, where one of them continually tries to pick the right thing and continually, you know, in the game of getting your website ahead, continues getting screwed over by it.
Right.
So I don't think, to me, he doesn't come across as somebody who planned it all the way. But if you look at all of his decisions are meant to move himself and Facebook forward. And every once in a while, the decision is, do I help my friend or do I help Facebook? And he picks Facebook.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the strength of that opening sequence, for better or worse, and I mean, it was strong enough to make me hate, well, everything for the next 2 hours, really is bookended by the last thing we see, which is Zuckerberg trying, refreshing, after sending a friend request to the girl who, in this narrative anyway, started the whole thing by rejecting him rightfully because he was an ass clown. And I think that for me, it felt less like someone who is planning ahead and has, you know, the Batman gambits in place, so much as a character who's really, really smart, but doesn't necessarily use that unless and until he feels like he's threatened or until his feelings are hurt.
So is your first viewing of this movie then, Matthew, you feel sympathy at the end when they decide to use that and he's refreshing going, gee, I sure hope she likes me because I did this all for her?
No, I feel no sympathy for anyone in this film. And the reason why is partly because, you know, we have that strong performance at the very beginning where he's having the discussion, but both sides of the discussion feel douchey to me. When the girl with the dragon tattoo is yelling at him, I was like, okay, well, maybe, you know, take a moment, take a step back. Yes, he's being pretty much selfish and very preoccupied and very self-oriented. But I didn't feel at the beginning like she was responding entirely to what we saw. So I felt like, okay, there's clearly something that's setting up an expectation that he's been this disconnected, this, you know, whatever you want to call it, disenfranchising to his lady friend before. But as we go through this, the only character who comes across to me as empathetic or sympathetic is Spider-Man. His name? Eduardo?
Yeah, Eduardo. Yep.
But even then,
brilliantly played by not a Brazilian guy at all.
Yes.
No. Which I feel compelled to bring up.
Hey, you know what? It's your call. If it makes you feel any better, Zuckerberg. Wait, no, never mind. But yeah, as we go through here, even he has the moment where I'm like, you know what? No. When he's. Yes,
well, his fault was his own hubris, right? Where he thought, hey, I'm a business major at Harvard. I mean, I know all this stuff. I'm the one that's moving and shaking and making this company forward. Yes, I'll sign these papers to ensure that I continue to hold 30% of the company. And then he gets screwed because he did the one thing that you're always told to do before you sign a contract. Get your lawyer to read it. Right.
I think it's not I don't think his downfall comes from hubris. I think his downfall comes from thinking that His friendship trumps
I can see Zuckerberg's business decision.
He trusted his friend to not be influenced by other outside sources,
right?
Who were giving him advice to push Facebook forward.
His
friend to trust his business savvy,
right?
When it really, what it clearly comes down to is, at least in this movie, Zuckerberg clearly believes himself to be smarter than Eduardo.
Well, then really everyone else is,
And he's stated multiple times in the movie
That
he was smarter and well be above and beyond everyone else. We will call this a fictionalized version of Zuckerberg.
Because he was not consulted in any way.
As portrayed by Eisenberg, which I think did a great job in this role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does he make the fictionalized version of Zuckerberg seem like he has a condition of some kind? I don't know whether it'd be an Asperger's or an ADD.
It's a good question. I think that at times,
because he just, and this is kind of brilliant play on the term, the social network. He's just socially awkward and doesn't know how to work in social situations.
Yeah. A big part of the checklist. I think for the autism spectrum is that inability to relate emotionally,
mm-hmm.
or to either to convey your own emotions or to understand the emotions of others, while still feeling those emotions, mm-hmm. obviously. And I think you could make a strong argument that Eisenberg's performance of Zuckerberg could well have had Asperger's or some form of autism. Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely a read that would be fair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of leery of it simply because when I was a kid, there seemed to be a lot of discussion of, which characters in which place were being played with a subtext where they were clearly gay. And as I grew up, I was like, this is kind of silly to me. Why are we even breaking this down? And it came to a point where, in many representations, not as many as we'd like, you will see characters of alternate sexuality played completely, you should excuse the expression, straight, to where you will, you have that representation. I feel like it's a really kind of a go-to thing now to say, wait, is this character, demonstrating Asperger's?
Yeah.
Is this character demonstrating something on the autism spectrum?
But I think that you need to maybe, depending on how you want to view this character and go into it, and especially as you approach a character like this, you have to maybe think about those things because that makes you decide whether at the end, whether this is a character that you have more sympathy for or less sympathy for based on his actions. Well, I know you've already stated that, but I'm saying these are the things that other people might want to take in to consideration and think about.
If I'm asking myself, if they were playing a character who was identified as someone with Asperger's, would I feel differently about the fact that the character is played, and the girlfriend says it, dating him is like being on a Stairmaster. Watching him is exhausting. Mm-hmm. Listening to him talk, and if I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have the right to give it a try, but there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people. That, to me, whether it's just you're an ass, or whether it's, you have an untreated Asperger's, or if you have something else, I don't necessarily feel like the way the movie plays it would affect my interpretation because the movie is clearly setting him up, not necessarily as a villain, but at the very least as a very unpleasant, douchey person. And it's to the point where if you said to me, does this fictionalized version of someone who may or may not really exist have Asperger's, yes or no, I would say, I don't know, but I don't like it.
The process of the working with actors is really interesting from the Fincher approach in this piece, especially in this opening scene, which I think is really cool because, as Matthew said, it does set up the tone for this character and the tone of the movie going forward. In this scene that was shot in a real bar with real people, all throughout the rehearsal process, they were making noise. I mean, Fincher said, okay, most of the time your background people are just pantomiming everything. So pretend you're having a conversation, pretend you're playing games, pretend you're doing this, and don't say anything so we can get good audio from the from this. As he was doing this for the movie, he had everybody just making loud bar noise, just talk, do it, make noise. And they had to, Eisenberg and the other girl, I forget what her name is.
Rooney Mara.
Mara. Mm-hmm.
So they had to talk at that level so that when they said, okay, now pantomime everything, they still had that sense of, okay, this is as loud as I need to talk. Because you know how it is when you fake talk loud. And you've actually had the experience of talking loud in that crowd. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very fascinating. And really, there are a lot of great directorial tips that you can pick up by watching the behind-the-scenes video that comes on the Blu-ray 2-disc set that you can get over at Amazon.com. Click on that banner over at Majorspoilers.com. You can pick up the copy. The whole bonus stuff is, if you guys have not watched this, just phenomenal as far as the depth that they go into the making of this movie. It's almost 2 hours worth of making of content, as well as the commentary tracks that you can listen to while you're watching the movie.
It's one of the Blu-rays that I've wanted since I got my Blu-ray, but I still have never bought.
Because I remember you watched this the first time. You're like, oh, I love this movie.
Yeah, I know.
This is the best movie ever.
I watched this movie like 8 times. I still have never got... I almost downloaded, but the iTunes version doesn't have all the bonus stuff. I was just going to download.
You might want to look and see if it's the iTunes download version has the bonus content.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
I'll look while you're chatting up some other things. But in fact, why don't you chat up some of the people that helped make this show possible? I'll look this up very quickly.
I would love to do that. Let's give a shout out to all the people who donate to... Well, that's funny. My document decided to do
what you get
things.
For using my documents instead of
stinking drive.
Google Docs
made a blank page in my middle of my screen. Da, 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 da. Hey, look at that! Shout out to all the people who helped make this possible: Troy Huff, Matthew Jones, George White, Aaron Stafford, Matthew Bach, Crystal Groves, William Place, Scott Veach, DDP McCarthy, and Jared Willis. Thank you for your donations and Major Spoilers to keep this ship afloat.
It does not look like you get the bonus content, so you definitely want to get the Blu-ray for this.
No, I want the Blu-ray.
And with the holidays coming up, maybe, Zach, you will find it in your stocking this year if you've been naughty or nice.
Or in my mailbox in an Amazon package.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will have made sure that it doesn't include my name on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, music-wise.
This was the movie that made me start focusing on soundtracks. This is the first movie soundtrack I ever downloaded, and I still listen to it randomly throughout my year. I really enjoy the soundtrack a lot.
Is it because it's Trent Reznor, or because they did that cover of I'm a freak, I'm a punk? What's the song that they do? There's a cover song.
Troll the Mountain Top or whatever.
Oh, no, that is pretty cool. No, but there's...
The Hall of the Mountain.
Yeah, Hall of the Mountain. Yeah. Close enough. That's a troll.
But do you like it because it's Trent Reznor doing all the
sound? I didn't even know who Trent Reznor was when I first downloaded this.
But now you know.
He's Nine Inch Nails.
That's right. No, that was no influencing factor. I just watched... When I watched the opening... the scene after the bar scene where Mark is running through Harvard's campus back to his dorms.
Mm-hmm.
That song right there had me... on the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. And I think that's one of the things that maybe surprised a lot of people, Rodrigo, is Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails with all the, you know, blah, blah, and now he's doing this motion picture soundtrack and it's really good.
Yeah, well, you know, people, you'd be surprised what people's talents are.
I mean, we've seen this before, right?
They wrap us up with the
Boingo Boingo and Batman and Simpsons and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, It consider that, like, yeah, lots of people like Elton John, but if you look at The Lion King and the song of The Lion King, they're superb. They're not pop necessarily. Mm-hmm. They are something above and beyond, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes giving someone a shot like this really, really allows them to shine. Sometimes it backfires.
Right.
But a lot of the time, even if it backfires, you just end up with a unremarkable soundtrack.
Right. But I mean, it's taking that one thing that you don't expect and looking for that thing that you don't expect and then putting it in and saying, okay, why don't you try this? Very much like Danny Elfman doing the Batman themes and the Simpsons themes and all that stuff. And saying, well, why don't you try something different? Unlike a movie that we just recently watched called Dungeons and Dragons. Listeners, you can go check it out in November's bonus tracks over at members.majorspoilers.com, where it sounds like this person, and I'm not trying to put the person down, but it sounds like he's trying to be John Williams.
Right.
We need a John Williams type score here. You there, do a John Williams score, and it sounds very much like Superman.
Right.
When I don't think it's trying to be.
No, it's trying to be an epic movie like Superman, like Raiders of the Lost Ark,
Right. But you're right, Zach. I think the music does play a real important part in this.
Yeah.
In this movie.
I think it sets the tone of that first song of kind of this tranquil, almost humble beginning thing, but then it gets all discorded and rough as much as the movie ends up being.
What else you got for us?
Oh, well, production-wise,
yes,
the editing is super.
Oh yeah, when
sharp.
When you have fast dialogue,
yeah,
you better be popping on your.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I watched this. And I forgot how fast the dialogue was.
Mm-hmm.
I got something on editing.
Okay.
It's interesting to watch this movie after so recently having seen Birth of a Nation, because we can see that the trends in filmmaking at this point have completely reversed, right? Birth of a Nation, here's a title card telling you what is happening, and then you have characters that are just mouthing stuff, and it kind of doesn't matter what they say. In The Social Network, you have characters with this, like, really sharp, snappy dialogue, where basically what you're watching is these characters talk. That's all anybody ever does in the movies, just talk.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, you have jumps in time, and you are left on your own to figure out what's happening, right? Nobody tells you it is now 1997 or whatever, 2013.
Yeah, there's no title card that comes up or anything like that.
Right, right. There's stuff for places, and I think there might be a couple of things that let you know when a few of the early scenes are taking place, but mostly any time jump, and we do jump back and forth a lot, is implicit, and you figure it out on the fly. So I think it's interesting to see that there was a time when filmmakers were like, well, there's no way people are going to understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nowadays, they're like, well, to tell people that this is a different year would be almost insulting, right? We need people to just jump in there and figure it out.
Yeah.
The other thing that makes this really work, though, when we're talking about editing, is because we're jumping between the past story that involves Eduardo and Zuckerberg, and then we jump to the forward story where the two of them are in litigation with one another.
Right.
And then you jump over to the Winklevoss litigation that has Eduardo as a witness, and maybe seeing this all through Zuckerberg's mind's eye, because so many things are going on at the same time, we, like Zuckerberg, forget that at one point in the movie, Eduardo is a witness for the Zuckerbergs. And
for the Winklevosses.
I'm sorry, for the Winklevosses. Yeah. And Zuckerberg makes a comment about my friend over there, and he points, and that's one part where suddenly the edit is a lot longer than what we're used to emphasize that you're right, Zuckerberg, your friend is gone. He is not your friend anymore based on what you have done. And it's a real powerful moment in the film because this is a part where we're jumping between litigation, and the past all at the same time.
And the first time that we jump forward, Eduardo's already on the other side of the table. I mean, as far as the litigation goes, he's never on the same side of the table as Mark Zuckerberg.
Right.
But, I mean, that's something that the structure of the movie does for you is it sets up this thing where it's like, at some point in this movie, these two are going to break up.
Right.
Right? And you find that out way before that actually happens. I mean, they actually
start at the end.
They stay together for almost the entirety of the movie before he finally screws him over.
Mm-hmm. And then that, I guess there are moments too where Eduardo believes that it was Zuckerberg who brought up the story in the Herald or whatever,
Crimson
about the chicken.
Right.
And then the lawyer's like, no, he didn't want us to include this. We dug it up on ourselves. And he's like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe this guy isn't as bad as I thought. Maybe I need to rethink this. But you know, when you go from, and I forget what today's value of Facebook is, but you're
11
getting...
11 gazillion.
Yeah, it's like 11
Well, I mean, if you think about the price per share, and he's got 0.3%, 0.03%, or is it 0.03 or 0.003%?
It's not a share in the company. It's 0.03, yeah. I think, is what it was.
He owns, like, maybe if I calculated it right, like at $119 a share. He's less or right at $1 million mm-hmm. for the number of shares that they were talking about, 24 million shares that are out there. Yeah, I would be pretty mad too.
It's interesting. There was an article a year, a couple months ago or something that talked about people that made off well from Facebook because they did stuff for the company early on, and they just, like, a guy came in and painted all the murals on their wall and, like, here's some stock.
Oh, yeah.
And he made, like, $20 million.
Yeah, if you, what is his name? David Cho, I think is his name.
Maybe.
He does a podcast. It's one that young audiences should not listen to. It's DVD ASA. It's where he does this podcast with porn star Asa Akira, and they've been long friends for a long time. And there's a really good episode where he talks about how he got all these shares of Facebook stock because it was early in the company. Mm-hmm. Come out and just paint a mural on our wall, and he was trying to do everything he could to scrape together a buck. And they're like, "Oh man, we can't pay you. Can we pay you in shares of stock?" And he's like, "Oh Jesus, whatever. Yeah, okay." Moves on. And then he kept the stock, and they go public, and he's a multimillionaire. Yeah. Doesn't ever have to work a day in his life again, and does whatever he wants. It's a good episode to listen to, but it's also full of a lot of sex talk in there too. It's a top quality podcast.
Going back to the fast talk,
some
editing and stuff. We watched this in a watching film class, a gen ed class at university, and the teacher insisted that we watched with the subtitles on.
Why?
Which just ignored the crap out of me. She said, they talk so fast that you might not be able to understand. I was just like, first off, watching movies with subtitles on in English just annoys me anyways, because I feel like directors and sound designers go through the trouble of making things a certain volume and forcing a listener to pay attention. It's like, you can't sit back and just try to nonchalantly watch The Social Network. You have to be engaged and involved, and you have to pay attention at the whole thing. Otherwise, you're going to drop lines and stuff. And so I feel like, especially in the club scenes or the bar at the beginning, that you intentionally have to
you have to
lean in and get involved in that scene to make sure you're catching everything. And I think to watch this movie with the subtitles on kind of does a disservice to what they were doing.
I would definitely agree with you on that. I would say at some point, Zach, when you get that Christmas morning, when you get that Blu-ray disc, sit down and watch with the commentary track on.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
And watch those behind the scenes, because I think you're going to learn a lot. The other thing that's really surprising to people is the amount of special effects that are going on in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They were denied permission to shoot on Harvard grounds. So the couple of scenes that you actually see of Harvard University are actually shot from across the street of Harvard. So that they can, you know, it's in the shot. Oh, right. Well, that's Boston, you know, territory, not Harvard territory. Everything else was shot on another college down the street. But the huge amounts of compositing that they went in, you know, getting pictures from various angles and compositing those into the different places on set, compositing well-known buildings into shots as they're moving and tracking that, most people are going to realize that, oh, the Winklevoss twins played by Armie Hammer, yes, you're going to have to do a crap ton of motion capture and compositing to make that work. But even simple things like the scene where they're outside the Jewish party.
Fraternity.
The fraternity, where they're breathing in the cold air. All that breath is totally fake.
Right.
Yeah. Which, I mean, watching it, I thought there was something weird about it, and I was like, is this on purpose? Like, are they lighting them in such a way that their breath is, like, super obvious every time they take a breath? Because, it there was something about it that really didn't seem natural to me. And I had no idea that this much compositing was on. I was like, the director's trying to tell me something here. Like, he put a light.
It's cold.
He put a light specifically aimed at their mouth so that I would see every time they breathe. And no, apparently they just, you know, went in and did it with After Effects.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess now, and this movie's what, only 2 years old or something like that?
2010.
3 years old.
2 years, yeah. 2 years.
The first time I watched it, I didn't notice it either until you watched the behind the scenes stuff. You're like, really? Or you read the Cinefx magazine.
I mean, I don't know exactly what the process was for the Winklevoss twins, but at no point did I think that You know, it's not so it's not like Steve Rogers in Captain America where he's like super skinny and sometimes like his head doesn't seem to be quite the right size for his body.
Yeah, they had to make sure that their builds were almost exactly the same. And as far as the casting goes, Armie Hammer could have been replaced with John Pierce. Is that his name?
Josh Pierce.
Because the casting was really kind of down to that wire between the two. So it could have easily been flipped in that case.
Which, by the way, I had never seen Armie Hammer in anything. Like, I was like, I haven't seen The Lone Ranger because it looks terrible.
Right. Yep.
But like when he comes on, he's like twins. I was like, wow. He's got a really deep voice. That's a really good-looking guy. I can't believe they found two of them. Apparently, they didn't. It's the magic of computers. But I was, like, impressed. I was like, that guy should do voice work.
Yeah, yeah.
But wait, he doesn't have to because he's so good-looking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think they used a lot of the same... Well, they did use the exact same technology that they used in the movie where Brad Pitt goes from an old man to a young man.
Oh, Benjamin Button.
They had to use a lot of that same technology to motion track the face with moving cameras and everything that's going on in that film.
Plus some good old fashioned, I think, like shot angling because shot reverse shot stuff, obviously he can just be both people. And also I think to make them look bigger, I don't know exactly how tall Jesse Eisenberg is, but there's a few shots
where
looking at the camera from behind and upward and you're like, this is totally a thing where they're sitting on a nice little box.
Matthew will look up in the IMDb how tall Armie Hammer is and how tall Jesse Eisenberg is while we're talking.
Yeah, that first scene where he meets him in the hallway
and
he's like, oh, you guys are really big, we're a real crew, and they look
massive,
enormous.
You know, there are some things, especially in the face replacement, that are done to help ease the placement. So the first time that we meet the Winklevoss twins and they're wearing their winter garb, the one Winklevoss has that band on his head and then the ear flaps. That's Pierce that they replaced so that they could go in and composite the face the head, a whole lot like better than what they had before. And it makes it a lot easier than tracking the whole hair and all of that stuff. You just have to track that area that is uncovered.
Nice.
And so it's, I mean, just when you think of just about that, and all the work that has to be done for that, because I mean, we've seen, well, maybe not all of us have seen the Haley Mills and Haley Mills in Parent Trap, where it's just split screen down the middle.
Right.
And if you guys, I'm guessing you've never seen Parent Trap with Haley Mills.
I think I have, but I didn't.
This is like the Disney movies.
I'm aware of it. Yeah. And they did the Lindsay Lohan version.
Yeah.
So.
But you know, you can see clearly split down the middle of the screen is this line that,
oh man,
because
like,
of the way that they're trying to do.
If you've ever seen Twin Dragons with Jackie Chan, the compositing is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like the two of them will like walk up to each other. Like the two of them will walk up to each other. And one of them is like glowing and jittering. And it's like
Gilligan's Island level. When
I mean, it is that bad.
Everybody on the island had a duplicate.
Yeah.
And so that's why I really like the effect work in this.
Well, and I mean, and it goes to show where we are technologically, where it's like, where now it is easier. Well, not easier, but you have the luxury of casting one person to play twins and have the movie not really suffer for it.
Right.
Whereas before, you would have either had to cast twins or they would have never been allowed to stand next to each
other. Well, or you would have had to have cast Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right, right.
No, you would never do that.
The other thing that is somewhat interesting, and it goes back to the question that we've asked multiple times about fictionalized version of a universe versus the real story, and which one do you prefer? People who are in the know would look at this movie and go, that's not Harvard. You know, that's Wesleyan or wherever it is.
Yeah.
Just like when we watch Dances with Wolves and we're all sitting in the theater going, there's no way in hell that that's Hayes. Kansas, Fort Hayes.
Hey, what's that thing in the background?
That's a mountain, dude.
That's a hill, man.
Yeah. You know, back then Hayes was a lot closer to Denver.
Yeah, there was a lot of tectonic shifts since then. Yeah,
exactly. But does that bother? I mean, I don't know Harvard from
Adam,
from Harvard.
Yeah.
But does that bother you that's not shot on campus and they've doctored the shots to make it look more like Harvard, even though it's still not, Zach?
It doesn't bother me that Star Wars wasn't shot on Tatooine, so I don't know why that would really bother me that much.
Well, Tatooine doesn't really exist.
Yeah, I know.
No,
but
I think there's real depth in what he just said.
Like, why would it matter? If I don't know what Harvard looks like, even if they told me that this isn't Harvard. And I was like, it makes sense. It's like, why would I matter if Harvard doesn't look right or the story was completely wrong? In either one, I'm just watching a film to be entertained, essentially.
Okay. Were you entertained?
Oh, yeah. I love this movie.
Give us some final thoughts on this.
Social Network.
And what you've learned.
Yeah. Let's go with what I learned. That getting control of of a scene and pacing it with the dialogue and matching that up with editing was super important in this movie, and learning that a stable shot will help a chaotic movie in pace and in dialogue a whole lot more. Because if this movie would have been shot on shoulder or something with a steady cam, it would have been even more chaotic and it just would have been too much. But besides that, The Social Network is something that I really enjoy. I love watching the story. It seems unlike most films that we have. It's a film that harkens to my generation of people with technology and social media and things. And after watching this a couple times, there's lessons in that the society as a whole should take away from Facebook, as the internet is permanent. And there's a whole lot of lessons that are just kind of somewhat throwaway lines, but people can learn about life and on the internet and in general from this movie. As a telling of events that have actually happened, knowing not all of them are completely true, I still found it to be entertaining, because that's what we kind of want from movies. I mean, that's essentially what we want from movies, is to be entertained. And so the degrees of being unentertained due to understanding places weren't true to what they are, or stories weren't true as they are, I think you kind of just put them out of your mind just a tiny bit in this movie. And if you want a less fictionalized but still fictionalized account of this story, you can go read Accidental Billionaires. It's good.
Have you read it?
I'm almost done with it right now. I started reading it on Saturday. Your perceptions of characters might change. For instance, Zuckerberg really wasn't that interested in getting into a Final Club. The chicken thing is said flat out, it wasn't Mark, it was guys from another Final Club, the one that Eduardo was trying to get into. And it just kind of paints, most of the things that have happened might have happened at different time, different out of order, but they've made it more entertaining and condensed to happen. So if you find this story interesting, or you want to kind of learn more about what happened, go check it out. It's a pretty quick read. It's not very long. It's entertaining. So check that out if you like this movie.
And what did your fiance think of this?
She did not watch it with me this time, but she has watched it before, and she actually enjoys this movie.
Good.
Yeah.
Matthew, what do you think? This is your first time watching the movie.
I thought that it was a well-constructed movie. I thought that the story really had a lot going for it, and I think that just based on my expectations of reality versus my expectations of fiction, I find I'll probably, just because of the way everything wraps up in the end, I find a little bit more fiction than I would expect from this. And I hated every single character in this movie. And at the end, I was looking for a way for them all to lose their lawsuit and maybe burst into flame.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody did kind of lose. I mean, the Winklevosses are painted as idiots.
Horrible people.
And yes, they did get a $60 million settlement, but, you know, big deal.
Yeah.
They probably already had that much money in their investment account. Eduardo, you don't feel sorry for, because, again, he got what he deserved with the not reading your contract. And if you think, oh, well, Zuckerberg kind of came out on top because, you know, he's got this billion-dollar company. Well, when it did go IPO, it went way down a lot. And some people will say, well, there's your comeuppance. Yeah. And then, of course, what Eisenberg did to Timberlake, calling the cops on the party and having him arrested and giving him an out to get him out of the company, got his comeuppance.
I think it's interesting because I feel empathy for almost every character in the story. I feel like maybe it's a generational thing, but I feel empathy for Mark because obviously one of the most successful technological people in the last decade in the world, and people tried to jump on his success and take advantage of him, I think, from a person who can't handle social situations very well. And I feel like after watching this a couple of times that a lot of the characters, especially Eduardo in the Winklevosses, were trying to prove themselves to a lot of people, especially like their fathers. Eduardo said in the movie that his father won't talk to him anymore because he's failed business strategies with Facebook. I mean, that's what I think his whole pressure for doing Facebook at all was, to try to prove himself to his dad, even though he'd already made $300,000 one summer.
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. The Winklevosses, I think, were trying to compensate for the fact that not everything went their way for once, because they came up in privilege and they're Olympians. I mean, they went to the Olympics and everything.
Sixth place.
Yeah, they didn't do very well. I was kind of upset when I found that out.
It's still the Olympics.
It's still the Olympics. I feel bad for them at a point, less so than anyone. It's like, you already had all this. Ideas come and go. You didn't really have anything to build upon the company.
Yeah.
But I still think they lost out because they look horrible as people now, and they didn't get what they wanted.
Except they look handsome.
No, people, absolutely. Have you seen him in real life?
No, I haven't.
Not as good looking, but still good looking dudes.
I would say the majority of these characters, not as good looking in real life.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Because I would say Mark Zuckerberg is actually better looking than Jesse Eisenberg.
You think so?
Oh, really? I wouldn't
either. Mm-hmm. But that may be because he really endeared himself to me in Zombieland.
Yeah.
Andy Samberg is better looking than both of them.
Yeah. No, definitely. Oh, I think Sandberg is a better Zuckerberg and possibly a better Eisenberg.
All right, Zach. Good job. You going to watch this movie again?
Oh, I'm sure I'll watch it in a couple months.
Rodrigo, you think you'll ever watch this movie again?
If I'm at Zach's house and he's like, "Hey, I'm watching The Social Network," I'll probably sit down and watch it. But otherwise, I'm probably like, I'm not gonna pop it in myself. But if somebody else wants to watch it, I certainly wouldn't be opposed. In the same way that if somebody was like, "Hey, let's watch Birth of a Nation," I'd be like, "No, thanks."
And Matthew, any desire to watch this again?
Are you threatening me?
No, I'm asking you a question.
No, that's called a joke. People laughed.
Oh.
No, if I want to watch unpleasant people stabbing each other in the back, I think I can go and, you know, watch Survivor or something.
Someday when they make a movie about major spoilers, they will take bits like that from the podcast and be like, "Matthew and Steven always had it out for each other." Steven,
especially when they smash cut to the interview of Matthew in the alley in the cardboard box.
Yeah. Am I going to be played by Justin Timberlake? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah. Steven is going to be played by Andy Richter. Yeah. And Matthew is going to be played by Justin Timberlake's face composited onto Pendulette's body.
How about we just split the difference and go Joey Fatone?
Yeah, sure.
There you go. That's going to be...
Rodrigo will be played by an Englishman.
Yeah, and I will be played by Jude Law.
That's going to be it for this week on Zach on Film. Make sure to head over to majorspoilers.com where you can find this podcasting posting page and give your thoughts about Social Network or anything else we talked about this episode. While you're there at Major Spoilers, make sure to click on the Amazon.com link and go buy yourself a Blu-ray copy of this so you can watch all of the great features therein. No, it won't cost you a dime extra, but a little bit will come back to us to keep this all going week after week after week. That's it for this week. Next week, it's Halloween.
Yes, it is.
And we're watching An American Werewolf in London.
I've got some stuff to say about that movie.
Oh, really? Good.